You're listening to Animal Talk, a show about connections between animals and people. I'm your host, Joanne Rideout. This month, we'll visit a wild animal rescue and rehab facility in Oregon, a unique center that is the manifestation of a dream for one Portland woman and a blessing for the many creatures she cares for with the help of a host of dedicated volunteers. It's the Wildlife Center of the North Coast, located in Olney near Astoria. Its founder is Charnel Fee, a tireless advocate for the many winged, furred, and other types of creatures who come her way. Injured, sick, and unable to care for themselves, animals can find sanctuary and a place to get well so that most can go back to the wild. Inside the center's hospital on a recent morning, Charnel is up to her elbows in fish. It's just about feeding time for the many seabirds on the premises, and she's dishing up breakfast.
Well, I was 25 years with a large law firm in Portland where I did their paralegal work, and just reached a point in my life that I wanted to go a different direction with the latter part of my life, and decided wildlife rehabilitation was a way to give back and to help other life forms that humans affect heavily. And so I sold my house and left my job and my family and my friends in Portland and spent 2 years looking for a location. Ended up on Highway 202 in Olney, of all places. I have 105 acres here. I was looking for property that itself needed rehab and then on which I could also build a rehab center. So I have 50 acres that I am converting back into historical wetlands on my property, and then also we built this rehab center on it. So it's a good legacy to leave. We help wildlife in Southwest Washington clear down to about Waldport, Oregon. It's a huge geographic area that we help because we're the only assistants. There's only one other small rehab center in Bandon that does seabirds, and that's about it for the whole Oregon coast. So we cover a very large geographic area. We continue to be all volunteer, and the brunt of our volunteers are transport people. Because of that large geographic zone, we need people to help get the wildlife to the center. And so we have kind of a Pony Express method where someone will bring a wildlife patient from Waldport up to Lincoln City to Pacific City to Rockaway and kind of Pony Express it up. We have a couple of triage stations along the way that help stabilize or overnight wildlife and then bring it back up.
So it sounds as though you're really working around the clock here to some degree, feeding creatures that are nocturnal. So what's your day like here? When does it begin and when does it end? When do you get to go to bed?
I'm pretty much 24/7. I have a pager in addition to the telephone in the hospital, so people can access us any time of day and night, and the police are not shy at all about calling me at 2 a.m. on something. But yeah, we, depending on our season, you know, the spring, summer, fall is very busy. Depending on our winter, with the storms, that can be overwhelming too with the seabirds coming in. So it's long days. This is pretty much all I do. And I do it because I want to.
As Charnel continues her morning routine, volunteer Sue Staples shows me around. So we're inside a building here that kind of looks kind of like a veterinary clinic. There are counters and there are stainless steel cages, and looks like there's another volunteer kind of cleaning out some of those cages, and there's a bird down at the end of the room and flopping around in the sink. So what is this building used for?
If you think about it in terms of a hospital, this would be the acute care area, and this is where birds that are being currently treated for an injury or an illness are housed. And because we're on the ocean, a lot of our population are seabirds, and seabirds live in water. They don't live in enclosures. And so every day, at least once a day, we take our birds and swim them, and that's what you hear down at the other end.
Oh, okay.
And it gives them a chance to clean themselves and to exercise a little bit and just to feel hopefully a little bit back to normal.
So where do the birds come from, and how do they end up coming to you here?
They come, our area is, the entire peninsula, the Long Beach Peninsula, south in Oregon to I think we've gotten birds as far south as Newport, and then east, Raymond, there's not a lot, there's no little towns further east from here, but there are no other rehab centers close. I think there's Chintimony in Corvallis, there's one in Hood River, there's one in Eugene, and then there's some further north in Washington State, but we're pretty isolated. So we get calls, the state police bring us birds, people that know about the center, just through word of mouth and advertising, Charnel tries to hand out as many cards as she can, know about the center. When we had the algae bloom, we were inundated with calls and people bringing injured birds. So people do know that we're here. That was wonderful in a way, but then we had so many, we had 700 plus birds come in because of that disaster.
Charnel explains the particulars.
Specifically, it was a strain of algae that was not really common to this area. It's more of a warm water algae. So it showed that the ocean current at that time was a little out of whack and out of the ordinary. So this algae came into the area at a time that there was a lot of juvenile and adult seabirds off of the Long Beach Peninsula, and it was very isolated to that specific area. This algae, when it is agitated by rough surf, which we had, actually has a soapy substance that it emits, and that began to contaminate the feathers of the birds. That soapy substance was as bad as oil as far as stripping their waterproofing, and so they got cold and hypothermic and went through the rough surf, covered with foam, and ended up on the beaches by the thousands. And like I say, it was, I got a call from a friend up in Ocean Park at 6 a.m. on the first day of that event, and he told me there were 7 common MERS on the beach in one spot. And I thought that's kind of strange because they usually come in ones or twos at the most. And so we arranged to get those birds, and by 10 o'clock that morning, the floodgates opened, and we knew we were in trouble. And there were hundreds of birds on the beach, hypothermic, covered with foam, and it went on for 6 days.
And when was that?
That was mid-October.
So then when you brought them here, what did you do? Did you have to bathe them all?
Well, yeah, we were overwhelmed, number one. On the first day, we were overwhelmed, not only for space, but also bodies. We didn't have enough people to help. So we just started doing triage, tried to warm them up, get fluids into them, stabilize them, get a little fluid in them, and food. And then we started making calls to other rehab centers that could help us. So many of those birds were actually transported out of this area so we could continue to bring in new intakes. And we ended up with about 100 of those birds at the end, and we had almost a 90% release rate on those birds. But certainly we couldn't have done nearly what we did without the help of other rehab centers that came in to help.
Right now, things are fairly quiet at the center. Sue Staples and I continue our tour of the hospital area. Down at one end of the room in a series of big sinks, some birds are having a pretty messy bird bath. Every once in a while, you see a wing go up in the air and lots of water splashing on the floor.
So this is party time over here.
It is. It's like the car wash. And these, again, these are northern fulmars also. They're just a different color. These are grayer birds. And that's what we have all the way along here. And they're bathing, just having a good time. You can see they get to move around a little bit.
So there's no danger that they're just going to take off and run away or
no.
Fly away?
Sometimes we have escapees, and we'll learn. I mean, the bird with the orange bill there, they get in the tank and they immediately fly out. So we just put some netting over the tank so that they don't wander. It's okay if they wander, but we don't want them flying down and impacting on the floor. That's not on the concrete floor. So we make sure that they stay put.
It does look like fun.
Yeah, they're just...
Oh, hi, guys.
It's always nice to see them. It's like, oh, I'm back to normal. I'm in the water again. This is good.
Sue has been volunteering here for years, and she wouldn't have it any other way.
I learned about the center and thought, what an absolutely perfect opportunity. And I guess for me, it's giving back, because birds have given me so much joy in my life. And this is a way, I'm a registered nurse, and I can apply some of my skills actually to working with the birds. And it's just the absolute, it's hard to lose them, because you do lose some, but we have about a 70% release rate here, successful release rate, and that's pretty high. It's just the best thing to be able to help these birds and the critters, because we've had porcupines recently, beaver, bobcat, elk, calf, deer every spring, fawns. So we get quite a selection that we get to work on. It's a real privilege, I think.
Oh, and who is this?
This is a red-tailed hawk, and this is an immature that doesn't have a red tail yet. And this bird, I believe, has a foot injury on that foot. We can't see on the right foot. I think it's a female because it's a big bird. The males are always smaller. And there was no break, you know, because we did an X-ray. But the foot was swollen, and clearly she will hold it up. She favors it. And so a red-tailed hawk needs both feet to hunt. So she's here, her foot's slowly improving. Sometimes we don't know what the injury is. They can't tell us. But, you know, we do our best and watch and wait, and her foot is slowly improving. She's probably been here a month or 5 weeks, something like that. She's a big girl.
That looks like a pretty formidable bird. So how do you go about going in there to approach that bird to help it? It seems like it could kind of take you apart if she wanted to.
Well, and again, in my experience, I've never found an aggressive bird, but again, they will protect themselves. And so what we do, we have leather gloves that reach almost up to our elbows. I always wear eye protection just because I think it's a good idea. And I'll take a towel, like a mid-sized towel, and we always approach, you never jump at birds, always approach them slowly. And just sort of, what I would do now is come in and put the towel over the bird. If their head gets covered, everything changes. They're calm. And that's one reason, if you watch or if you've read or seen anything about falconry, they always have the hoods. It just, if it's dark, then the bird is much more cooperative. So while we're working on them, we keep their head covered. And normally what we do is we hold them here with their back to our bellies, holding on to both feet, because those feet are the weapons, those big talons, and with their head covered. And then I think they feel secure because they're kind of pinned, they're enclosed. And we just are really quiet and calm and don't try not to move around much. And, you know, if we're cleaning their enclosure, or if Charnel wants to check their foot, something like that. And then they learn. I mean, they know when you're coming towards them with a towel what's going to happen. But it usually works. And the more confident you can be, that's better too. So.
Soon we head outside onto the grounds of the center. Numerous buildings are scattered around, designed to hold birds and other animals that are convalescing. All are open to the sky with sturdy netting to prevent escapes. We go inside one large aviary where a single bird perches at one end.
Oh yeah, here he is. I don't want him to come flying over.
Oh my goodness, look at that.
Yeah, isn't he beautiful?
Wow.
And it'll just stop right there. There we go. This is the eagle that will be released soon. We've had this eagle quite a while. And again, check with Charnel, because we've had several eagles and they've kind of been released over time. But we try to release birds as close as we can to the area they were found in, so that they're somewhat familiar with their surroundings. And in these big cages, they can fly, so they can develop their muscle strength again. If you think after you've had surgery, you know, most people have physical therapy to regain their strength. And that's what we have to try to get the birds, you know, to redevelop the muscle mass again. This is the mouse arena. And if we have barn owls or red-tailed hawks, we'll bring live mice and put them in here. And the screening goes way down, so the little mousies can't escape. But what it does is it assures us that the bird is able to kill live prey, because it's easy to eat a little dead mouse, but you have to have it all together to catch that critter. So we test them that way by putting live prey in here, and then they catch it. And if they fail that test, then they stay with us longer.
So does the same rule apply with a big, now there's a bird that is really a formidable opponent. So does the same rule apply that if you cover an eagle's head, it will come down? Mm-hmm.
It does. Normally, if we had, when we'll have to catch this bird again, three or four of us will come into this area with towels and gloves, because she'll avoid us as much as possible. And then, she's just going to land. Don't poop on us now. Oops, I should have said that.
It's okay. No, that's reality.
She's checking us out.
She's doing really well. Wow. Well, it's time for breakfast, too.
Oh,
and
I
people
see.
Bring food. Normally what she'll do is when she realizes she's going to be caught, she'll get down in a corner in a defensive position with her feet out. And then you just put the towel over and gently turn her back over. And once that towel's over her head again, she'll be pretty quiet. But they're incredibly strong. They're very, very strong birds, and you really have to respect their strength. We took one injured eagle over to Dr. Pope's for an x-ray, and if no wild critter wants to be placed on their back, that's a very vulnerable position, and we had to put the eagle on her back for a film, and those wings went out to the 6-foot span, and the feet came up, and I remember the two techs just went out the door. It was quite a scene to get, you know, to hold down the bird for a film. So they're very impressive.
Hmm. Well, it seems as though if she came over here, is it a female?
I think they
look the same, the plumage is the same?
They're exact. The females are simply bigger. So sometimes it's hard to tell unless you have two or it's a markedly big bird.
So then with her coming over and landing right above us, do you ever have issues with the birds getting too acclimated to humans?
Not usually, because we don't pet them or carry them around. We maintain that distance. The most common time you see that is in the morning when it's time for food, and they associate us with food. But once that bird is released again and is feeding on its own, there will be no, you know, there's no temptation to hang around people.
Next, we visit a flock of pelicans in a nearby building.
We can walk down there.
They are big.
And this is breeding plumage, that silvery back and the yellow head. They're very beautiful birds. But again, the pelicans normally have historically migrated to California and South Mexico, Central America in the winter, and they're staying. And we don't know if this is a global warming thing, if it's El Nino, exactly what it is, but it's happened. This is the third year, I believe. And even though it might be warmer up here, the way the ocean functions, there may not be food. And so we're getting in very thin birds, very malnourished pelicans, because they stay, but then they can't feed. And so we don't know what the solution to that is. But we've never, ever had this many before.
And so were they all brought to you individually, or did they all come together in a bunch? Or
individually. And you see, there's a youngster, a little immature one on the left, no color. I mean, kind of fuzzy-headed. And so there's a mix of adults and immatures, but mainly a big, healthy-looking adult birds, but just unable to find the food to sustain them. So it's a real concern.
So what do you feed them?
You'll see on the ground here, it looks like a kitty litter box almost. Those are full of fish, and Charnel has contracts with various, she's always hustling for fish. And I'm not sure what she's feeding them. They're close to a foot long, she can tell you. But they go through 3 or 4 of these a day. They're big eaters. And of course, if they come in malnourished, we want them to be big and strong and fat when they go out. And so we feed them a lot. And that's one of the things that, one of the biggest costs for the center is fish for the birds.
As we continue our tour of the property, Sue halts in front of an empty enclosure.
We had a bobcat that we kept for, almost 9 or 10 months last year. Fierce, wonderful cat. Had several surgeries on a back foot. He'd been caught in a trap. And evidently he pulled it out of the trap, and he had a degloving injury where it pulls the skin right off the foot. So he had pins, and that was stressful for that kitty because he was so wild that being around us was very difficult. But it was just joyful to turn him loose when he was finally healthy enough. He was released from here, so hopefully he's on this property somewhere.
Finally, it's breakfast time. I follow Sue into one of the outbuildings where flocks of seabirds are eagerly awaiting their morning meal.
So because they finish that so fast, I'll bring more. I mean, we want them fat and happy.
And so they don't overeat, they just eat what they need?
Wild things don't. You know, they know when they're full. Let's see if I can grab one of these little things. Come here, Frederick. Yes, come here.
Oh, wow. How beautiful.
And he doesn't have vision in this eye. But you can feel his keel bone here.
Oh, beautiful feet.
It's like he's getting there, but he's, you know, his breast should pretty much cover that if you can feel it that easy. And this is an immature bird because he still has the white and black on his head, and then this eye thing, he has a vision thing. The adults are much more clearly, they're more in that other tank, but they're very clearly black and white. You know, these guys are still getting their adult plumage.
There you go.
Oh, goodness.
Oh, they are cute.
Aren't they some? They're very personable birds. Yeah, they are. And see, there's one with a bill. It's misgrown. It's like this. Crosses itself. He's swimming right there. So he probably isn't releasable because he can't feed efficiently. We take big clippers and we trim that back because the bill is like fingernails. But that doesn't happen in the wild. His bill is misaligned. That's the word I was looking for.
So he doesn't have a manicurist out there to help him?
No.
Oh, well. He needs staff.
That's it, yeah.
That's really interesting. So then you know when you're feeding them enough because they eat what they need.
And because these guys aren't finishing theirs. She said that these were for 2 and 4, so these guys might have eaten already, but this is a ton of fish for this small number of birds. I'm going to give some of this to the MERS. Because what they'll do then is they'll pick one up and waste it, they'll throw it. You know, it's like, oh, I guess I'm not hungry, and they throw it, and then they won't eat it again.
Now it's time for the eagle to have its meal, but no fish for this critter. Sue has a freshly dead rabbit she got from the refrigerator inside the animal hospital.
Yeah, you're going to be set free. Are you so happy? This is where I wear gloves. There's a faucet right outside. I'm gonna rinse this off.
Inside the aviary, Sue picks up what's left of the eagle's previous meal and places the rabbit on the ground. The eagle, sitting high on a perch at the other end of the building, makes no moves toward it. In a few moments, we'll head back up to the hospital building where Sue will put the remains or offal in the trash. Soon, she'll just toss these outside on the ground.
Once the vultures are in the area later in the year, we have a place we leave offal out for them so that they can eat also. But they're not here yet, so.
She brings a pan full of drinking water back inside.
I'm just going to walk this back up.
Yes, you're talking, aren't you? Talking. You want breakfast?
So how long do you think it'll take before that bird will go check out the bunny?
Probably once he doesn't hear us anymore.
Oh,
he'll
yeah.
fly down.
Yeah. Eat in peace.
They really do, unless sometimes when they're in there and they're really hungry, they'll jump right down. But usually they'll wait to... It's no danger around, I guess, they perceive.
Yeah. Well, I suppose that's probably good overall that they perceive humans as dangerous, even here, you know, for their sake when they go back to the wild.
That's true. Unfortunately, we are.
Yeah, that would be something that I think I would have to learn, is to not try to pet everything, you know, because that's sort of my tendency.
Well, and we do. I mean, we'll talk to them and hold them a little bit. But I guess the thing that I always remember is that it's stressful for them.
Yeah.
It's not like a puppy or a kitten that's going to enjoy it. They're like, I'm going to be eaten. You know, somebody's got a hold of me. So. But truly, if you kind of have that total Bambi perspective, this would be a hard place because we do have to euthanize animals and there are animals in pain and you do have to feed critters to other critters. So, and people sort it out, you know, they figure out if it's for them. And one person, lady comes out and all she wants to do is laundry in the kitchen and keep us neat. And that's really valuable. Go through the towels and make sure they're in good shape. So there's sort of a place for, you know, we have people that do the grounds that repair the enclosures because they take a beating, you know, that you saw that eagle fly up and grab the black cloth, you know, it takes a few times of that and it's going to need a repair. I just have to grab some dishes full.
Well, this seems like really, really rewarding work.
It is. It's, and we're growing. I mean, there's always growing pains. I mean, after the algae bloom, we suddenly realized that some things that had just sort of happened probably could be more organized.
So the folks at the Wildlife Center are doing an awful lot for animals, and they can always use a hand. Here's Wildlife Center founder, Charnel Fee.
You know, it's an important service that we provide as far as helping preserve our natural resources and educate people for future generations. So I just encourage people to think about us if they have extra time to give or a couple extra dollars.
The Wildlife Center also does extensive outreach through programs at schools, libraries, state parks, and beaches. At their presentations, you're likely to see some of the center's education animals, beautiful wild creatures that have suffered permanent disabilities and can no longer live on their own. If you'd like to get involved with the Wildlife Center of the North Coast, you can find them online at coastwildlife.org. I'm Joanne Rideout. Thanks for listening to Animal Talk.